Welcome to What the Fantasy. I am Brandon Hay at HeyB3.
My name is Zadik Cantabedian. I'm at ZCantsFF on Twitter. And I'd like to introduce our very first guest. And I can't think of a better first guest to have. This is my friend Brian Restivo. He's in my home league. He's joining us from his car at work right now. He's taking the time off. He's in his car right now outside of work. This guy is a three-time champ of my current home league. He's more hardcore than I am at this. I've known this guy since like second or third grade. Brian Restivo, welcome to the show, man. How you doing tonight?
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm in my car. Definitely in my car. I left work and I said, hey, I got to make a call. I'll be back.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, so, but I'm excited. This is fun.
Brian is a special case. I don't think I say he's hardcore because I don't think you'll ever find a guy who celebrates his victories like Brian does. Brian, you want to tell him what you do when you win the trophy, when you come in first every year?
I get the year that I won tattooed on my foot.
Yeah. So he's got three tattoos of his championship years on his foot. And I think he said, were we drunk when you were saying it? Are you going to start getting the years you come in last too on your foot? Or
I've never come in last. This year I started 0-4 and I said, oh God, I better start shaving the other foot.
Yeah, he was in last for a day or two. Yeah, so no. our league is it's a 10-team like league. It started like 12 years ago, I think. I came on a little bit late and it's a 10-team league, and it kind of has changed into a half-point PPR league. You're kind of straightforward, one-quarterback league. It's nothing fancy, and I kind of like it like that because leagues right now are getting too out of control for me. So, I played Brian last week. He beat me by 10 points. He had a solid week, and he's making a good comeback. Brian, how are you feeling about your chances going into the rest of the season? You feeling like you're going to make a strong push, man? How do you feel about your team?
Pretty good. I went through most of my buys already. I think the only person I have my like core roster that is still yet to have their bye is Kelsey. So other than that, I think, you know, my quarterbacks and all my running backs and my receivers have all gone through their buys. So I'm pretty pumped. I started 0-4, but two of those losses, like, I think I had the second most points of the week. Like, the only person I could have lost to was the person that beat me. So, I'm excited. Yeah, my team's good.
Yeah, and you were pretty, like, level-headed about it. Like, I'd expect you to, like, get super pissed off about it, but you were very calm about it. Like, you're like, all right, cool. Like, you were like, usually I'd get, like, hear something. You're like, what the fuck? Oh man, yeah, but
my TV, dude, yeah. My TV.
Your TV what?
My TV might tell you different. There might be a few dents in it.
Yeah, I'm sure. And the funny thing is me and Brian are always drafting next to each other every year. So because we're usually finishing close to each other, so you're usually like two to one spot away from each other because we're always finishing close, which is like we compete really hard in fantasy football every year, and there's guys who compete like who aren't as competitive. But you know, I think our league for the most part is pretty competitive. But he and I, every single season, every single offseason, are always like telling each other just openly like what we're doing in the first two picks, with our first two picks, and it never really works out. I mean, for me, it never works out. My second round pick always sucks because I mean, this kind of like flows into the conversation that I want to have. I want to talk about like RB2s, right? So what I'm always trying to do with my first two picks. Every year, I'm always doing this, and it's horrible. It never works out. I'm always trying to draft two RB1s because I want an RB1 on my RB2 spot. And the scarcity of the position, I don't want to deal with it, right? So this year, I drafted Nick Chubb and Antonio Gibson. Big mistakes for obvious reasons. Brian went with Jonathan Taylor and Travis Kelce, and so far it's working out really good for him, especially Jonathan Taylor's midseason push. He's balling out of his mind right now. Dude, so I mean, like
that makes sense. Why you're so mad about Antonio Gibson all the time since you bit 10 second? That makes so much more sense now. Because at the beginning of the season, you're so angry about that.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't expect him to not perform as well this year. He was up on my list too. I probably would have taken him.
Well, that's comforting to know. That's reassuring to know. I mean, at least I had you like vouching for him. That's that makes me feel better. Cause I feel like I was like, did everybody else just not like him? Or the, I mean, I reached, but this is the thing. Like I need to stop doing this because Davante Adams was there and, you know, play this is just for everybody in general. When they draft, just don't force it. Don't force it anymore. Just take the studs. If you see it, like Brian did it right. He took Kelsey. He didn't force it. You know, he did it right. And me, I'm super aggressive. I'm like, no, I'm going to lock it up. It never works out. My second round pick is always a bust. So talking about RB2s, like we always, you know, try to reach for them. It never really works out. Then we have that thing called the RB's dead zone that became popular this year, right? That middle part of the draft where you have Myles Gaskin and Mike Davis and Chris Carson and these guys who just don't ever work out. And then you have later parts of the draft, right? Where Brian, like past the 10th round, Brian picked up Damien Harris, right? And you got guys like James Conner going off right now. And you got guys like Elijah Mitchell that Brian also picked. So Brian's got Damien Harris and Elijah Mitchell on his team as his RB2s, right? And I was on Twitter earlier today and I was asking other people, I was like, how do you guys define RB2s? And everybody else was saying RB2s are kind of like players who got like a kind of safe to moderate floor, like 5 to 10 points. And hopefully they fall into a touchdown or they get, you know, you have a lot of guys who are just pure reception runners like Damien Harris. He doesn't catch the ball. You have guys who are like JD McKissick and other like guys who catch the ball, who are better receiving backs, who build their points off of half of PPR formats. So, the whole thing of, I think drafting your RB2 later part of the draft, I think is what I'm going to start to implement going forward. I don't think I'm going to force a whole running back situation anymore. I don't know. What do you guys think about that? You guys feel like keep forcing it and keep going for like those early round RB2s if the value's there, or just kind of like hold off and just take your studs in the early part of rounds? I mean, Brian, what do you think about that?
Well, so I'm kind of like, I've usually always drafted similar to you. I'm just always been such a hardcore running back. Like I feel like having two stud running backs is so much more beneficial because, you know, you're kind of just like guaranteed, like your running back, if you get those two studs, to be getting 20 plus carries. Or you see games with, like, you know, you draft DeAndre Hopkins or, what are the other top, it used to be Julio Jones, where he was a top 10, and then like he would just fall off. In some games, he'd have one or two catches, and you're like, you know. So I'm always just so weary. I always felt like there's more value later on with receivers, but just I feel like the new generation of quarterbacks has just made the receivers so much more valuable. It's such a pass happy league that now you just can't reach anymore for running backs. Like you got to take Davante Adams because Aaron Rodgers it's such a great combination. You have to take Tyreek out. Before you take, you know, Joe Mixon. You got to take Tyreek Hill before Joe Mixon. Even though they're like six or seven spots different based on rankings, like people reach for Joe Mixon because like, oh, I get two running backs. But damn, I could have had, you know, Stephon Diggs or Tyreek Hill. So I think I'm kind of with you now. It's like I didn't expect Kelsey to fall to me at the 11th pick. So when he was there, it was kind of like, how do you not? How do you not take him? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I passed on like two other good receivers that were right there that went right behind me, like Stephon Diggs. And I think it was Tyreek Hill too. I think he went after you also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he did. I feel the same way. Like now I think running back RB2s is like, you want someone, your second running back, to hopefully get about 60 to 70 yards, a couple catches. And you want to hope that bank on one of those being a touchdown, and then you can get your 15 points and move on.
I'm in RB2 land right now because I had Nick Chubb go on COVID list. So I'm piecing together. It's just this horrible. I have Devontae Freeman and JD McKissick as my top two running backs this week. So I'm trying to create this like Voltron running back of like one guy's a pass catcher and the other guy's like going to get opportunities on Thursday Night Football against a weak run defense because Latavius Murray's out. So he's in
a lot.
What's that?
I like a lot this week.
You like Freeman a lot? Well, that when I hear Brian say that, when I hear Brian vouch for my players, it makes me feel good because he's like the only one of the few guys I trust. I think the only guy I trust in my entire league that has a sound draft methodology. Yeah, Brian,
yeah, so I'm totally on the opposite end. I've been, especially before this year, I've been big on zero running back. So what I do is I load up on wide receivers, get a really good quarterback, a good tight end, one of the top tight ends, and then I piece together my running back room. Like, so I get like Nyheim Hines before Tariq Cohen. Those kind of guys. But that kind of burned me last year. So what I did this year was I got a running back earlier, so one in the top like three rounds. And then my second running back is like a piece together type one. So it's been working out pretty good. I feel like running backs get hurt so much. And then with, you know, the running backs that, like you said, they just have to fall in the end zone. Like we were talking last week about Adrian Peterson. You were just hoping he got like 30, 40 yards and fell in the end zone, you know, and he did fall in the end zone. So that's, I mean, you're playing odds and that kind of burns you sometimes, but a lot of times, you know, since you just need a touchdown, get like an average game of 40 or 50 yards. Obviously, sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. But I think running backs, because with wide receivers, they don't really have to score touchdowns, you know, because they catch more passes, they get more yards. So that's what the way I've always looked at it. I know a lot of people love to get the running backs early because they, you know, they'll fall off. But there's always injuries and. I always try to vulture players I think, you know, are going to be the second in line. I'm just waiting for those injuries. And it's worked sometimes, doesn't work sometimes. So that's kind of how I go about it.
My entire bench this year, Brian, I'm sure you've seen it, has been all backup running backs because I'm just waiting for somebody to get injured. I had Sonny Michel, A.J. Dillon, Khalil Herbert, I had Alexander Matt. Like, I had like one wide receiver and all backup running backs. Because I don't even want to beat these vultures to the waiver wire. I don't even want to deal with these guys. And I just, you know, and there's so many running backs you can have. But like, there's all, and they're always going down. I think, like, locking in, like, a stud running back, like a Dalvin Cook, Christian McCaffrey, and your studs, Zeke Elliott, lock those guys up. And then after that, like, if the rest of the running backs aren't projected to perform, like, or if they haven't even yet proven that they can perform at the level of those guys are, that the track record these studs have had established, and we've got guys like, you know, Austin Eckler, who's been great, you know, that good for him, he's worked out. Yeah, and Joe Mixon's kind of like had his ups and downs, but like most of these other running backs don't work out, and they really don't ever work out season after season after season. It's really hard to hit on these guys. So I think it's probably a good strategy to lock in one of those top guys if you can, and then just kind of take studs at other positions and piece it together as the season goes along, because man, these injuries have been coming on so bad. Like, I got Nick Chubb this year, and I'm terrified every year to play every week to play Nick Chubb. He's a stud. I love him, and he's a beast. That 70-yard touchdown he ripped off last week was insane. But the guy gets no receptions, and it hurts his value so much.
Yeah.
But only reason I took Nick Chubb this year was because I love watching the guy. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's great. Ran like 20, they clocked him at like 20.3 like 3 miles an hour on that 7 yard run.
Yeah.
And he's like one of the running back, only running backs where he doesn't catch the ball and he doesn't get a ton of carries. I think he had like 14 carries last week for like 130 yards. He's so efficient with it. So that's the good part about him. But it is, you know, when he doesn't break those like chunk runs, then it really hurts you with him because he just doesn't get all the carries. Which is weird because he's a big running back, so you would think they would give him more carries, but they just don't.
Yeah.
It's very similar to Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan Taylor doesn't really catch that many passes.
Yeah. Imagine if these guys had prominent workhorse roles. Like Jonathan Taylor, I was playing Brian last week. He had Jonathan Taylor went off on me on Thursday night. I was like, all right, well, I got the guy that can match Jonathan Taylor production, and he pretty much matched a point to point minus like 2 or 3 points.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, like, I don't know, man. I really want to quit the season already. This is such a – I'm burned out so bad. I'm so burned out this season, man.
Well, like all the COVID just jumping out of nowhere, then you know, I feel like there's injuries every week, and I'm just like – because the thing with the COVID is I don't – you know, they don't really tell you right away, you know, if the players are vaccinated. So, you know, there's different timetables for, you know, if they are vaccinated, if they're not – then, you know, they might be out 1 week, and then, you know, like, you know, some players are out 2 weeks, and then, like, they're affected by it. So, man, it's just a war of attrition. You know, I'm like, benches need to be way bigger because I've got so many players are either hurt or got COVID. And I'm like, I don't even have. I've had to play. I have to play guys that like don't even get a catch some weeks. So,
right.
And I think that's such a good like way to look at the question too that you brought up. It's like on the way you draft is. Sometimes I feel with receivers, you also have to kind of look if you're going to go early with receivers. Sometimes you have to look at who their backup quarterback is, because I think you just saw a perfect example is without Rodgers on that team, like Davante Adams is basically like non-playable. Mm-hmm. And like Allen Robinson, I still think is one of the best route runners and one of the best, one of the best receivers, but with Justin Fields, I mean, you don't even want him on your roster. Like, so these guys are all top receivers, but if you don't have a good quarterback and like with Rodgers getting COVID and now he might be out 2 weeks, like how do you even justify starting him with Jordan Love looking just horrible?
Isn't it insane how, you know, going to Justin Fields, how he's just locked on to Darnell Mooney, the second year receiver, you know, and you have dude, he is one of the most elite. What's the explanation for that? What do you guys think that is?
I did hear on Monday night, they said they were talking and they said that Mooney would stay after with Fields after practice and do routes. And I don't think A-Rob would do. I mean, I'm guessing A-Rob did. They didn't say A-Rob. So, you know,
they haven't paid him, so they're probably just like, we're not going to.
Yeah. I know A-Rob, I mean, in Jacksonville, he, you know, it was famous when he was like, damn it, Blake, throw the ball in bounds. Like, he kind of has a little bit of fuse if, like, the quarterback plays poorly. So I think he's probably as frustrated, which I don't understand why he went to Chicago anyway, because they didn't have a quarterback. You would think when he left Jacksonville, he would make sure, like, before he signs, like, who is going to be your quarterback?
Yeah.
And then,
right. Brian, what are you hoping? Are you hoping Nagy gets fired at the end of the year? Are you done with this guy or what?
Yeah, it's sad to watch. That's just like that.
Yeah,
it's like three quarterbacks now. You can't make that offense work. It's clearly not. It's clearly his system.
We haven't mentioned it. I don't know if I mentioned it. Brian's a Bears fan, so it's ever since I've known him, it's not been good.
But you see, like, potential, I think, with, like, that second half with Fields and Mooney, and even A-Rob got going a little bit, Komet, you know, they've got to shore up some parts of the defense because they've had some injuries, but you see, like, potential, and it just sucks because they wasted that defense for a couple years because the offense couldn't get their, you know, shit together, so.
Yeah. I mean, I think at this point, like, you see how Fields is, like, the next coach, or it has to be a new coach. They basically just have to steal, like, the Baltimore Ravens playbook. You don't need a top receiver. You have a couple burners. You have a couple guys that can spread the field. And then you let Fields do what he can do, like Lamar Jackson. Like, that team, that offense looks great. And, like, you can't tell me there's a top 10 receiver on that team. I mean, right now, at least. I mean, Marquise Brown's doing good.
Yeah. I'm actually loving Cole Kmet's, you know, he's coming up in the season. I'm actually excited to watch this guy. You know, I can't wait till they come back from bye. I wish I didn't have such a good tight end on my team so I could have Cole Kmet on my team. You know, that's how much I like Cole Kmet going into the rest of the year. But yeah, man. I mean, Brian, do you got to go back to work?
I'm at the 20-minute mark. I gotta go.
All right, brother.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Yeah, dude. Yeah, thanks for coming on, Brian.
Yeah,
yeah, maybe we can do one more at the end of the season, maybe, hopefully.
All right, cool. Maybe I'll just request a day off and I'll be on the whole time.
All right, brother.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Hey, nice meeting you, Brian.
You too, bud.
Later. Word up, man.
All right, yeah. So is there anything else you wanted to talk about running back two-wise? Or we covered a lot of it. Anything else?
No, just, yeah, that's we covered it all, I think. We got a good chunk of it. So that should be.
Oh, I just wanted to bring up this in my home league. I have gotten D'Ernest Johnson twice off of waivers. Like, I got him the first time when Chubb and Hunt got hurt because I was the worst team. I got him then. I dropped him, and then I was able to get him again this week. So I'm still not very good in that league. But I'm like third worst. So. Because usually, like you're saying, you know, with the waivers, usually you aren't able to pick someone back up, you know, when you cut them and you're trying to pick them up again. So I was happy about that because it looks like I heard today that Hunt's looking like worse. Like he's not going to come back anytime soon. Chubb has COVID. I saw Demetric Felton has COVID. So I don't even know who else they're going to roll out at running back. So that'll be interesting.
I like John Kelly to get more. I would like to see John Kelly get more touches. That's all I got to say about that. I mean, Demetric Felton should be used more, but John Kelly should be used more as a complimentary early down back.
No, I agree. And I believe he started out on the Rams, right? Because I remember when he first came out of college, I think he went to Tennessee, and I thought he would be good. I was like, oh, he's going to get some run. Just never did. It's funny how, like, you think someone's going to get an opportunity, and they just never do. And then some players like James Robinson just has to get one opportunity and show up, and then, you know, they continually get that opportunity. It's all kind of, you know, just about luck and being at the right place.
I am a James Conner truther to the end of my days, and I'm so happy. So happy that he's getting the ball out, dude. I mean, he looks the same exact way he did last year. He looks maybe a little bit better than he did last year. Like, he's never been the most agile guy, but I've always said that James Conner has those fundamental traits that make a good running back last. Like, what Frank Gore did was he relied on his fundamentals, and he built off those fundamentals, and he made those fundamentals carried him past the lifespan of his athleticism. And that's what James Conner's doing. And that people were so down on James Conner, man. I couldn't stand it. And I was like, no, just watch how he runs. Watch his patience. Watch his vision. He knows how to control his body. He knows how to run through the lanes. He knows how to read blocks. He knows how to set up blocks. He can do all the things the running back can do. It's not all about running fast in a straight line, because that never happens as a running back. You're never going to run for 40 yards in a straight line unless there's a freaking huge hole the size that Jonathan Taylor was running through the Jets hole last Thursday night. Those guys, he had the biggest length. You could fit in another – I said this on Twitter. You could have fit another Colts offensive line in the holes that the Colts offensive line was creating for Jonathan Taylor. You could have put two offensive lines on that field, and it would have fit in the holes. So James Conner is doing everything a running back needs to do to succeed in the NFL. He's getting leverage on his blocks, making the right vision. He has the vision to do it. And he's going to be one of the top backs the rest of the year, man. I'm so happy for him, dude. And also I would love to see also in that same breath, Eno Benjamin get a shot. I like Eno Benjamin coming out of college.
All right. So two things. One, I feel like that whole James Conner rant was directed at me, not intentionally, but that's let me finish. That's like, I did not like James Conner going to Arizona. I did not like. And I know it's weird, but now that they let running backs wear single digits, I feel like some players look faster. Like, I think James Conner looks faster now that he's wearing a single digit. And he's proved me wrong. He looked good. He has been, like, making me so angry the last couple of weeks because, a couple weeks ago when I had Kyler that did really nothing because James Conner keeps on vulturing all the touchdowns in the red zone. But this past week, he had caught that one pass from Colt McCoy and ran and scored, and he looks good. And now that Edmonds is out, I definitely agree with you on Eno Benjamin. A couple years ago when, I actually picked him in a couple rookie drafts, and I was like, this is going to be the guy, and he couldn't get on the field. He couldn't even dress because he wouldn't play special teams. Then when he had that run where he ran over the defender and scored a touchdown and they're kind of talking him up, I'm like, oh, finally, Eno is going to get his time. I don't know what that really looks like because, James Conner's probably still going to get most of the carries. But, yeah, I agree on that. And I have to say I was wrong about James Conner. He's having a great season. And for those people that rostered him, they are really, really looking good right now because he's going to get those carries there, especially with Kyler still kind of banged up. So they might lean on him even more. And, I don't know how DeAndre's looking. So, yeah.
I want to say something that coming back to the Kyler Murray point where you said he's vulturing touchdowns from Kyler Murray. I think, and this is where you see it with Jalen Hurts, James Conner vulturing Kyler Murray's rushing touchdowns is the same thing that Jordan Howard and Boston Scott have been doing to Jalen Hurts' rushing upside at the goal
definitely.
Line.
Right? Yeah,
and this is where I think, that whole rushing quarterback cheat code, while it may provide you that floor, this is where it backfires, where they developed this sound running game where it wasn't there before. and they didn't discover it yet. You know, they're, you know, I didn't, it, with James Conner, it didn't take long for them to start using James Conner like consistently at the goal line. So I think this is where you have to be careful. When I would love to do a study on this maybe in the offseason about rushing quarterbacks and efficient goal line running backs and how they hurt their rushing production at the goal line. Lamar Jackson, I'm not sure how it's affected him this year. I'll have to look into that. Who else is there that any running quarterbacks you can think of that it might be? These are like the three predominant rushing quarterbacks, right?
Right. Yeah. I think Lamar is the only one that's kind of like fine. He's going to get his touchdowns regardless just because, you know, he's so athletic. But yeah, Kyler's definitely seeing a little bit of a regression on his running touchdowns, and Jalen Hurts the same way. I think Hurts is kind of hurt by just Sirianni isn't running a very good offense. Because it seems like when they get near the goal line, it's like, even with Kenny Gainwell, it's like straight dive. You know,
yeah,
just a dive. We're not doing anything else.
No, and the Eagles last week, it was third and three. It was like third and three from like the Chargers 4-yard line or something like that. And I was like, they got to throw it now. They still ran it with Jordan Howard. And that scared the shit out of me when I saw that. I was like, oh no, they're serious about this thing. He hasn't had over 20 – Jalen Hurts hasn't had over 20 pass attempts in the past 2 weeks. You really need these guys to get down for Jalen Hurts to have value. I don't know what's going to happen to the Broncos. Another discussion. We got more show. Let's do the rest of the show.
Yeah. All right. So now I think this was another thing where we had miscommunication. So I did top three pet peeves, and I didn't necessarily mean for fantasy football, but I put one fantasy football in mine. So we'll do it anyway. Okay. Yeah,
cool.
So we'll do it anyway. So you start off with one of your pet peeves. You don't have to do them in any order. Just say one of them.
Just kickers and defenses in general. I've lost so many matchups this week because of kickers and defenses. Where otherwise I would have either like come very close to winning those matchups or won them outright. That's my pet peeve. One of my pet peeves in fantasy football.
Yeah, I definitely agree, especially with defenses, because it's so like fluky. You know, like interceptions for touchdowns and that kind of stuff. And I will add, I'm in a league that plays punters also and head coaches. And that always gets me. So, like, based on how much you lose by and how much you win by, you get positive or negative points. That's bit me in the ass a couple times, you know. and the punter, you know, I mean, that's like inside. So you want to get a bad offense that punts a lot, but sometimes that backfires on you. So, yeah, that's definitely one. So I'll go to my one football one for pet peeves. Two tight end leagues. So I'm in one, two tight end leagues, which, first of all, it's my fault because I did not remember it was a two tight end league, and I waited on just one tight end, and everyone – so pretty much my tight ends are, like, both backup tight ends that, like, never get the ball. So I pretty much have – maybe a combined 5 points every week for those positions. And I just don't see the point of having two, like where you have to start two tight ends. I'm fine with flexes where you start another tight end. But I hate that. Right. You know, there's just not enough good tight ends in the league, you know. And when there's buys, like, and there's no one to pick up. And tight ends are just horrible after, like, the top four or five anyway. So that's one of my pet peeves.
That sounds horrific. I would never want to do a two tight end mandatory league. That's so pointless. That's such a waste of energy for everybody. That's not fun. The other tight end spot, it doesn't matter if you're playing in a freaking 18 league. It's going to be a bad tight end. It's going to be so hard to get another good tight end. My second pet peeve is people who rev their shitty rice rocket. Oh, what? No, take that. That's not bad. I can't see that. Rev their bad, shitty, like, little, like, fucking shitty, like, racer Fast and the Furious cars and, it, like, in neighborhoods and just fucking just piss me off. Or Harley Davidson's, dude. Like, Harley Davidson's revving in neighborhoods. I can't stand it. I just don't like people who speed in residential neighborhoods. So that's my second pet peeve.
Okay, yeah, my wife actually hates that too. When she ever hears it, you know, when we're out, she gets like so upset about it, and I agree. And a lot of times those cars, they don't even look nice. You know, it's like they kind of soup up like shitty cars. Well, and I'm like, what's the point?
It's not even, they're not even like, they're not even like good. Yeah, they're not even good cars. They just have like loud mufflers on them, man. And
right. Yeah.
They're not even like fast cars. They're not, and they just, they rev them and they come down my street. I had to tell one guy to slow down because he was speeding in my alley. And I actually stopped him next to my house. I was like, man, you got to stop. There's kids playing in the alley right down the street. And he stops and he looks at me. He goes, I'm like, do you understand? And he goes, yeah. And I, as soon as I walk away, he just speeds away. I was like, dude, I was like, all right, why be that guy? Why can't you just be a good person and just not do that in a residential neighborhood? So, yeah, you can see how upset I got right now. And, yeah, that's my pet peeve.
Yeah, that's a good one. All right. My second one is people when they're switching lanes that won't, like, switch lanes immediately. Like, they coast into the next lane, so they're kind of, like, riding between the two lanes, like, you, instead of getting over. I just hate that because especially when there's a lane that's a turn lane. Like, you know, it can only turn. You know you're going to turn if you're trying to get over. I'm just like, right. Get over. Don't, like, just slowly coast. That's all you're supposed to do. Just get over. Like, that and, like, a lot of people in Florida do that, and a lot of people in Florida don't know how to merge. That's something that always, like, makes me and my wife mad. Like, they don't know how to merge. They come to a complete stop in a merge lane, so you know how you have to kind of get going to merge. So they take a complete stop, and, like, on a highway, there's not going to be large gaps for you to come to a complete stop and then, like, get over. And it's so frustrating. So that's my second pet peeve.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever experienced that. The whole drifting, like easing off the gas. You mean like easing off the gas when somebody merges into a lane, or just not speeding up enough?
Not, I guess a little bit of both.
Okay. My third one is something that's, if it's going back to fantasy football, it's something that was implemented just for me, and I've been lobbying against it for the past 10 years in my league. It's acquisition caps, because I'm the most active player in free agency. So for some reason, because of that, I don't know. I think 1 year I had like, I don't know what I did. This is my like second year of fantasy football. I did something that pissed off some people in the league. So they put the cap for acquisitions from free agency to 45. No, first it was 75. And then they realized that I was still having enough acquisitions. And then, so they put it to 45. And I'm already at like 36 for the year, and the year just halfway over. Because dude, things pop up. Like you have injuries, and then another, and then say you're like stashing some running backs, and then a running back goes down during practice in the middle of the week, and you're like, oh, let me go pick this guy up real quick. Or somebody drops somebody else from, you know, during the middle of the week, and you're like, oh, I'm gonna go pick this guy up. Like, just, this is like part of the process of turning your bench. I think if you're not that guy who's, you know, you're not doing it wrong, but like, I think for you to increase your odds of being better in fantasy football is to constantly turn your bench, and because it's all about the opportunities that are being presented. You know, it went from David Montgomery to Damian Williams to Khalil Herbert all within like less than a week, and like less than like 2 weeks, you know? And so you got to be able to move and keep up with that kind of stuff. Like you pick up Damian Williams, you have Damian Williams, pick Khalil Herbert, right? If Alvin Kamara, and so say if you have Alvin Kamara and you have Alex Collins and you're anticipating Chris Carson not playing this week, but then you're like, oh, I got to drop somebody because Alvin Kamara not my play anymore. So I got to pick up Mark Ingram. And you got to drop Alex Collins. Like constant things are happening. Like you can't be putting like handcuffs on somebody. And I've been making this argument so much, and I don't think it's ever going to be lifted, but I'm still going to keep fighting the power and protesting in the streets about this. So.
Yeah, I was in a league like that and everyone hated it. It was one where one of our buddies, he was the commissioner, and he got a little like power hungry, you know? So he like just started changing roles mid-season. Like out of nowhere, he started changing like the acquisition limits midway through the season. So like he changed it to like 10. Like week 7. So we still had like 9 weeks in. And I was like, we like freaked out, and he was like, I'm the commissioner. I can do whatever I want. And it was just, it was a pain. So I feel your pain. And yeah, there should not be a limit. I mean, you know, if you wanted to cut and sign, you know, add people like 10 people a week, I think that's your right. I mean, that's how you're running your team.
And you guys, I would have just quit the league if I was Like I was
we actually pretty much pushed him out of the league and like started like added a couple more people and then you know just did the league without him.
How awkward is it to do like a fantasy football breakup with like a friend and you're like, hey, I haven't had that conversation yet.
Yeah, it's rough. Like that happened in one of my leagues, and it was super awkward for a very long time because the guy would not stop bringing it up every time we hung out, like you know, as a group. But yeah, it gets awkward. So yeah, my last pet peeve, it's a pretty big one, and it's pretty much whenever I go out to anywhere that's like kind of like I get service, so like a restaurant, a bar, anything. I don't like when people call me boss, bro, or buddy. Right. I just find it like very condescending and like you're not being like a genuine person. Like if you're calling me boss, I know certain people probably not, but that's just like always like in my mind, I'm like, they're going to have to give me really good service to get a normal tip now because they call me boss. But yeah, that's one of my big pet peeves.
So what if your friends call you bro, like you're cool with it, right? But you just don't like.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's people I know, then yeah, it's fine. It's just like, people I don't know. I just take that as, you know, disrespect. So if I'm taking
your order, as a waiter, if I'm taking your order, I'm like, all right, bro, I got you, man. You want the Alfredo and right on, bro. I got you, man. I'll be right back.
That one's not that bad. I guess boss and buddy are the bigger ones for me. Bro, I guess isn't as bad. It depends on how it's said, I guess. The way you said it,
okay.
I wouldn't take offense.
Okay. I don't think it's a good thing anyway, because I'm pretty sure those aren't like in my vernacular. Like my favorite vernacular. So I got lucky.
Yeah, so we'll finish up the show with just talking briefly about some coaches we think that are on the hot seat. So you actually named a couple that I agree with. So I picked a couple different ones. Cool. So you start off with your first one.
Yeah, I think for the first one is the obvious one that I think everybody's in agreement with. It's Matt Nagy. I think he's just he's already proven, and not just this year, in years prior, that he's not the guy for the job, for a head coaching job. I don't think he has the imagination for it. I think he coaches scared. We saw last week he had a debacle with a timeout situation where he tried to ice the kicker instead of saving the final timeout. He tried to ice Chris Boswell instead of saving the final timeout for the Bears' final drive to maybe go tie the game up or try to go win the game. So, I mean, it's just those little instances right there. It's not just about calling. It's not about just knowing when to call run or pass plays, but it's also clock management and nuances like that. You have to understand, like, these are the nuances. This is kind of like why Anthony Lynn couldn't cut it as a head coach. Like, great guy, nice guy, you know, he called some good plays, but just didn't know how to do the nuances of the coaching job, and he didn't have that. There's like a bandwidth that you got to have as a coach, and Matt Nagy is just not cut out for it. He needs to go find a coordinator job somewhere. I mean, obviously he's a better coach than I could ever be, you know, he's got years and years of experience, but compared to the field, he's just not it. That offense and that talent, that city deserves better.
Yeah, one that it's fairly similar. I say Vic Fangio for the Broncos. I know they won last week. It was a big win, but I still don't think they make the playoffs. And even if they sneak into the playoffs, I think the Broncos, if they continue on with Fangio, they're just delaying the inevitable. About, you know, I don't think he's a great head coach. I think he's a hell of a defensive coordinator. He's also not very good with game management. He makes some bad calls, you know, in that. And two, I just don't think coaches that are like that work anymore, that want to be conservative, kind of like you're saying, you know, play defense, run the ball, and just, you know, you've got to be aggressive offensively, especially in that division with the Raiders, the Chargers, and the Chiefs, even though the Chiefs are kind of down. You've got to go for that, and teams don't really win with those defenses anymore just because it's an offensive league. So he's kind of one that I think – I just don't think he'll do enough this year to be kept, nor do I think he should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my second guy is Kyle Shanahan, just because for reasons, obvious reasons, that I think he's kind of getting in his own way as a coach. He's just I think he's overthinking the entire job too much. He's like last week he was playing against the Arizona Cardinals, right? And they are like one of the most leakiest run defenses. They called what, 8 or 10 run plays as opposed to a bunch of pass plays. I know they fell behind early, but still, like, you got to stick to what works, what they're vulnerable to. Like, you're playing Colt McCoy. The game's not going to run away from you. And then the week before that, I think they played against the Colts. They chose to throw it a bunch in the rain. You obviously saw that passes, the ball was coming out funky from Jimmy Garoppolo's hands. So I also with his personnel decisions, you know, I don't see what the point is in having these high draft picks. It's too much. It makes my stomach turn. It makes my stomach turn seeing him make the decisions that he's making. You can't make these decisions in the division that you're playing in. If you're to, you know, he's creative enough as a coach. You know, that's why I was very happy with Trey Lance being drafted there, because I was like, all right, Shanahan has the mind and the vision to implement this guy into a successful scheme and offense. He's perfect. They are a run first offense, and they're going to set the deep shot. All the traits that Trey Lance had would have been good enough to fit in Shanahan's offense from day one, given that he got first team reps in that offense in the offseason, you know, just so he had something to work off of to build chemistry with. But they chose to take statue Jimmy Garoppolo, good in his own right, but needs to be in a different offense. So Kyle Shanahan, I think he's officially in the hot seat.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. And the whole Brandon Ayuk thing where they're like, you know, he's obviously still a good player and they're trying to do some college stuff with him, try to teach him lessons. And yeah, I agree with that. My second one is a Judge with the Giants. He's so conservative. I think it was either last week or the week before. It was like a 4th and 1 and they're at like the opponent's 45 and he punted it. And it's just like, he doesn't like go for it. That team's not good enough to play that way. And they've had a bunch of close games, and I just don't think he does, you know, Daniel Jones any favors. I don't know if he's making personnel decisions. It's probably a little bit of both, and I think they just need a clean house because, you know, they brought in their supposed wide receiver one, Kenny Galladay. You know, he's been injured just like he has been the last couple of seasons. They brought in Kadarius Toney, which is the same position that Sterling Shepard is in. Kadarius Toney is a knucklehead, and he tries to punch people on the field. I just don't really know what they're doing. And honestly, they should have kept Wayne Gallman as the backup to Barkley. I think he's a better running back. He showed it last year. So yeah, I think Judge is definitely on the hot seat, even though this is only his second year, I think. But still, he's another one of those Patriot coaches that just doesn't make it as a head coach to me.
Yeah, and those are another one of the nuances of a coaching job that Judge lacks. Like, I don't think they have really – I don't know if they have culture in New York in the locker room. Mm-hmm. Like, they have cohesive – they don't have a real identity. They have culture. And, you know, punting in that position on the opponent's 45 when your team's not that great, it's just kind of unforgivable at this point where we're at in football. But my third one is Mike Zimmer. My honorable mention is Mike Zimmer. I think he's kind of more in the Vic Fangio mold, where he's a little bit outdated. He loses track. I feel like he just kind of forces things and forgets that he has two prominent wide receivers and he could utilize them more often. The offense just loses that edge that it should have. It should be one of the more dominant offenses. There's no reason why it shouldn't be just destroying teams. You know, you have a serviceable quarterback like Kirk Cousins who could play well within a system. You have two great wide receivers, solid starting tight end, and one of the top three running backs in the league for the time being, for, you know, obvious reasons, news that just came out. I guess he'll have a job next year, but I think it wouldn't be horrible to start putting names on the table to find replacements. I don't know if Kirk Cousins will be there next year. I think his contract expires by the end of the year. I'm not sure. But, yeah, honorable mention of Zimmer, because they've dropped way too many games and they shouldn't have this many losses on their record.
I agree. I don't know how many, but I know last week they had a 2-touchdown lead a couple times. They get these leads, and I'm going to be honest, I haven't watched the full games, but it seems like they get super conservative, they stop throwing the ball, and then teams come back, and then they have to like try to get a drive at the end. And we've seen Cousins is good throughout the game, but he's not necessarily the quarterback you want always leading the comebacks, you know, last drive of the game, you know, like the Bradys and the Rodgers and everything. So I do agree with that. And my honorable mention is, this might be somewhat of a reach, but Brian Flores with the Dolphins. I know he did a great job last year. This year, they obviously haven't met expectations, and this team just does not look like what I thought it would be. I thought they would be a strong defensive team. I thought they would run the ball, and then, you know, do Tua with, like, you know, the play action and everything. In the games I've watched, they don't really want to run the ball. The defense isn't really that good, and they have, like, Tua throwing the ball over places, and I think they've really messed up the whole Tua situation with last year and this year. And I don't know really how they move forward. I think Tua is good enough, but obviously he has some injuries. And I think last year didn't help the perception of him. He was put in games that he shouldn't have put him in. And then they would take him out of games, you know, in the fourth quarter for Ryan Fitzpatrick. It just made no sense to me. So he probably isn't getting fired this year, but I definitely think some of the shine that he had after last year has come off. And there's going to be more questions about, you know, him as a coach moving forward.
I spoke to a Dolphins fan on Twitter today, like a really one of the more prominent Dolphins fans on Twitter today. And I asked him if he thought Brian Flores was on the hot seat. And he said, I told him I was really disgruntled and disappointed with the way they're handling Tua. They're kind of crushing him. They're messing him up, kind of like what Urban Meyer might be doing to Trevor Lawrence right now. But I think they're not instilling confidence in him, and you know that, and that flows throughout the locker room. You know, players feed off that kind of stuff. And I like Flores coming into the season. I really like Flores coming into the season. I thought he came in his first year on the job with the Dolphins as a head coach. He did a good job of making what he had work for him. But he made the point that it's not directly Flores that's doing what he's doing with Tua. But it's the front office. So there's like a disconnect between the players and the coaches and the front office. And, you know, I don't know what they're trying to do in the front. Obviously, they want to win games, but I think they are not handling the situation properly. So it's causing this kind of like disconnect, you know, and ruining, killing Tua's confidence as a quarterback.
All right, that's a good point. I think that's always hard for people, or especially, you know, me, to look at. Because some teams, you know, the coach has all the say, and then some teams they don't. But you don't ever really know all the, you know, ins and outs of how the organization works. So sometimes coaches get more credit than they should. Some times they get more blame than they should. So that's definitely a good point. So I think that does it for our show this week. So, so hopefully we'll get some of these guys that are injured, and we won't have any more players put on COVID, because I don't think my fantasy teams could take any more with my lineups. I'm scraping the barrel on putting some of these players in, and I might have to start Matt Collins on the Dolphins this week, and he's had like two games where he's had zero catches. So it's a rough time, but so that's the show, and we'll catch you guys next week.
All right, guys, have a good night.